Welcome back. Welcome back to the Grapevine. We're in the last hour of the Grapevine. We're picking some more grapes on the award-winning Truth Radio 101.7. It is the truth, and we're talking the truth. And do we have solutions for our streets? Do we have solutions in the streets of Milwaukee? I'm talking with the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. We have three members of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community here in the studio right now. I want you to introduce yourselves, and you know, I would, you know, every time I think about introducing ourselves, I always think about like summer camp. People be like, "Yeah, you go introduce yourselves." You start singing, having a little song, but no, let introduce yourself.
My name is El Haj Tassim Abdullah Babatu. I joined the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in 2004. Raised as a Christian and left Christianity in 1979 when I graduated high school and found my way to mainstream Islam and joined the Navy, traveled the world, did a lot of things, worked for AT&T 33 years, retired. But when I prayed, I'd ask Allah to guide me to a mosque among righteous and pious individuals. I seen this show called Islam Live, which was hosted by your father, El Haj, Dr. Muhammad Sabir, and my brother, our president, Rizwan Ahmed, his grandfather, El Haj Rashid Ahmed, may Allah elevate both of their status in paradise. But they brought me into Ahmadiyya, and it was the best thing I did, and I always tell people, it was like walking down the street and seeing a broken glass and something sparkled, and I walked over there and I found a diamond. That's what I look at when I said finding Ahmadiyya.
Appreciate it. Yes, sir.
Born Ahmadi Muslim right here in Milwaukee my whole life. Spent my whole life here in Milwaukee. Grew up with you, so you and I go way back. But I currently serve as the president of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community here in Milwaukee.
Yes, sir.
My name is Muzammil Jalal. I'm a minister of faith. I'm the regional imam here for the Wisconsin area.
So when we talk about the degradation, the moral degradation in Milwaukee. We're talking about Milwaukee. We talk about the world too and wherever else, but I think we're talking about Milwaukee in particular. There's a gentleman sitting at home, and he is not caught. He is at home. He just is sitting, almost rotting, waiting for something to happen or nothing, or maybe he's trying to get away with something. In his mind, he just ran two wonderful young ladies over, two of them. And then you have another gentleman who shot a 9-year-old. What is going through their mind, and what is God doing?
What is going through their mind, and what is God doing? You know, I can't speak on their behalf. But what I can say is when people who have sinned are ready for repentance, we're here. When people who have wronged are ready for a better life, we're here. God doesn't turn his back on people, and neither do we. Justice must be met out. But that doesn't mean we have to turn our back on those who have wronged themselves or wronged others. God is the most forgiving and the most merciful. We must be also. So when somebody wants to better themselves, I'm here. I'm all for it. But again, justice must be met on a global scale. And as Muslims, we believe that we not only see justice in this world and in the hereafter. That's what consoles our hearts. Because you said what happens to that 9-year-old girl. She gets her justice. In this world, if everything ends here, all I know is loss. All she had was suffering. But we believe in a world where there will be accountability in the hereafter. So I know those whose lives have been cut short in this world, be it in Milwaukee, be it in Malaysia, be it in Syria, be it in Syracuse, New York. Wherever it is, justice is waiting for them in this world and the hereafter. What we're concerned about is what we're held accountable for, to make sure that I'm never the one that wronged somebody. No one in my community is. Mm. That's what we're here for, and that's what we're all about. So those individuals that wrong themselves, making sure that that doesn't continue to the next generation. So we have to break the pattern. Because generation after generation, we keep seeing these unnecessary deaths take place. This unnecessary violence that's very internalized in our community. So what we're all about is making sure that we're not going to have another generation of children that grow up to hate themselves and hate each other.
Fatherlessness, motherlessness. What is the solution to that? Like, because that is a part. I mean, you all are family people. You know, you look very responsible. Some people are growing up without mothers, without fathers, specifically here in Milwaukee. They are tragically either being taken away by the system or they're choosing a different path to not be in their child's life. How do we adjust? How do we make the adjustment to where we can bring the fathers, specifically we're talking about fathers, back into the family?
You know, first of all, there's an African proverb, and it says, talks about, you know, we're talking about it takes a village to raise a child, and it says, A village should show a child love, because if you don't, he will burn that village down to feel his warmth. Mm. So in order to get fathers, because a lot of these guys out here, they never had their father around, so they don't know how to be a parent. Mm-hmm. So we need to educate some parents on parenting. It needs to be done. You know, somebody close to them needs to pull their coattail and say, hey, you know, this is what it is to be a father. I talk to a lot of young men, and I tell them, even if you're not with that woman, be in your child's life. You got to be the one to break the cycle. Because your father wasn't there for you, you got to remember, you know what, I don't want my child feeling the pain that I felt of not having a father. Going somewhere and seeing another kid with their father, but yet you're fatherless. Those are some very, very important things. And unfortunately, those who don't know anything about parenting, they're going to continue that cycle. It just continues. But somebody has to be able to break that cycle. But that is where we come in. You know, the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, we have to educate them, to talk to them about what the responsibilities of a father is. You know, the father is the protector of the household. He mows everything. Everything starts with the father because he's that provider. And if you see the strength and the pillars and the things that he does in carrying the family, then that boy, he knows, okay, this is what it takes to be a father. So when you don't have a father, maybe there's an uncle. There's somebody else in the community that can become that role model. And this is one of the things I do. When I get kids in my life, I tell them the first thing I say, I'm your papa now. Mm. You know, you can call me Papa Babatu. You can call me Mr. Babatu. But right now, I am your papa. And I treat them that way. And when they start seeing that somebody cares, then they start seeing what fatherhood is like or what grandparenthood is like. And this is what it's going to take. It's going to take that and more, because then I need somebody when I'm not around, hey, show that kid that same love. Show him that respect. I had a little a guy, we were in Camp Rise one year, and one of the guys, he was 70-plus years old. He had the little 10-year-old boy crying. When I asked him what happened, he told me what happened. I made that guy go apologize to him. I said, you want that kid's respect, but yet you don't want to respect him. So we got to show these kids respect. Mm-hmm. We got to listen. That's the biggest thing. Kids are out here screaming and hollering for, I need help. But a lot of us, we turn the other way. We turn the other cheek. But we have to listen. Let me sit down and listen, okay? Now I understand what he's going through. I see why he acts this way, why he doesn't respond to certain things and certain things he does respond to, because he's saying, I need help. But yet, if I'm not the one who can help him, I should know somebody who can get him some help. And I guide him in that direction. And I always feel it's very, very important not to only establish that relationship with that kid, but with his parents and tell them, hey, this is what your kid is lacking. This is what your kid needs. You know, and again, I've earned the trust of those kids. They give me their parents' phone number. I've called mothers and fathers, and I tell them, I said, don't get upset with your kid, but this is what's going on. This is what they want.
So when they leave your presence, and they go back to the house, and they see domestic violence sometimes, they see outside, at the corner store, they see their friends going in and buying Lucy's, and they go and they see at night it's not fireworks anymore. It's gunshots now. You know, the transition from, it went from gunshots to fireworks, now back to gunshots again. When you have that child in your grasp, when they go back home, they have to go back home ultimately to mom. What are the women? What is the responsibility of the women in the home? How deep does that go? Are they held more responsible than the men? Well,
Manon, I'll tell you what, because there's a lot of people out there who don't have parents. There's a lot of people who do, and if you don't have parents, that doesn't mean you're at a loss. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of orphans in Milwaukee. There's a lot of kids with parents in Milwaukee who are still orphans, whose parents leave them to raise themselves. But you know who else was an orphan? The Prophet Muhammad, may the peace and blessings of God be upon him. He didn't have a mother and he didn't have a father. Mm-hmm. And that's for us to see. Deprived of the support of the world, if you have God and if you have guidance, you can still thrive and you can still be okay. So this is a message to everybody. Without a mother, a father, if you're a child, orphan, or adult, you can still be okay. Because our message and our teaching is that if you have God, you have everything. Mm. And God will provide everything you need. All guidance can come through him. Now, if somebody's comfort and childhood is given through the provisions of parents, that's amazing. But just because someone doesn't have an attentive or caring mother or father does not mean God will not provide for them. You can still be taken care of. You can still be loved. You can still have a roadmap. I mean, to level with you, you go to IKEA, you got instructions on how to make a table.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason we have mechanics. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go change your own transmission and your alternator. Maybe you need a YouTube video, but no one's going to walk up to a Hyundai and just swap out that transmission and be good to go.
Right.
I have to know how to work on that.
And especially on a 100-degree day.
You know, 100%. So now if I need instructions, if I need guidance on how to repair a car, how do I expect to just improv this thing called life? Mm-hmm. That's far more complex than an automobile.
Right.
So to answer your question about mothers, well, let's take a step back. You said, what's the responsibility of mothers? When in Islam, what's our responsibility to mothers? In Islam, it's said that paradise is under the feet of your mothers. Now, what does that mean? I mean, you can look at your mom's foot. You know,
does that mean that dads don't get to paradise
after the third time? That's what the Prophet said. Your mother is prioritized three times than your father. Now, what that means is there's nothing under your mother's feet. Mm-hmm. You know, but what is there under the pursuit of pleasing and serving your mother is God's pleasure. So if I dedicate my life to pleasing my mother, the woman who brought me into this world, if I take care of her, respect her, and listen to her, I'm on the path that pleases God.
Hey, we got a saying in the community, in the black community. Hey, mom say, if I brought you in this world, I'll take you out. Listen, but I think it's like all cultural communities. Hey, y'all, we're going to come right back with the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. We're going to talk about the women. And why is there some type of separation? Do everybody have to cover their face? All right, we'll be back in two.
You can't buy a best friend. You can love them, walk them, pet them, and care for them, whether they want you to or not. You can take a picture or 50. You can fly to the moon, travel the world, or just stay in bed. You can't buy a best friend like that, but you can adopt one. There are millions of pets waiting for a best friend just like you. Help us save them all at bestfriends.org.
La 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 la. La 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 la.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to The Grapevine. We're about to pick some more grapes to the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. And we're going to get right to it. We're going to get right to it. So we have the women. Women is, you know, we got. I had a show, and on my show, I was describing the viciousness of the women in society, and this in Milwaukee, in particular. There was an incident at Summerfest, and there was a few incidents at another fest where the guys weren't fisticuffing anymore. It was the women. It was multiple fights of women, and even it got to the point to where a woman beat up a guy. I mean, he probably did so. I mean, and she had some good hands. I'm just saying that. It's shifted to where the women were fighting so much, have been fighting so much, that now the men are videotaping and being the voyeurs of the women fighting. So and it's becoming really, really vicious to where the women are now, like, they're going at each other and they're saying words like, I'm going to kill you on sight. I'm going to hurt you on site. And then I see you guys. I see the women in, you know, the mosque. They're covering their heads. They go separate ways from the men. How does that system help solve the women that are fighting in our streets? This is daily, though. Like, it's almost like a pack of wolves, right? It's almost like a pack of wolves where women will, I've seen a video, these four girls, they were girls, and they just ganged up on an older lady, had to have been 45, 50 years old, not doing the best, but they were just dragging her. And I mean, they whooped her right here in Milwaukee, down the street. What can we do as a society to adopt those ways where we can become peaceful like those ladies that we see at your space?
Well, you know, there's hope. You know, it's not the first time that disbelievers have become believers, that people with animalistic tendencies or people who were inclined towards violence or who didn't know better adopted moral virtue or the high ground. That's what religion and faith is all about. So just like I have faith in God, I have faith in society that they can be upright. But, you know, when we talk about Muslim women, is it really that crazy? I know people have this big commotion about Muslim women. Is it really that crazy? Christians see Muslim women all the time. Every time a Christian goes to the church, you see a Muslim woman, the Virgin Mary, sitting up there in a picture with her head covered. You see her every day you go to a church, next to Jesus on the cross. So the only difference is, when a Christian sees a girl with her head covered, it's going to be the Virgin Mary. Every Muslim woman is going to idolize that and use that as her example. Is it really that crazy? And now, Christians aren't that foreign to covering themselves either, a nun. The highest form of sacrifice, the highest form of spirituality, the highest form of dedication in the Christian faith is being a nun for a woman. That's the bottom line for every Muslim woman. Literally, the bottom line, the beginning of faith for any Muslim woman is the height of covering yourself for a Christian woman.
But now women are taking off their clothes.
And that's not the only thing they're taking off. Their dignity, their common sense, their respect, their responsibilities, the motherhood, the maternal instinct, the self-respect. You know, once you lose the value of what a woman is, she can make or break a home.
Mm-hmm.
Once you lose that, that explains why our children are running rampant and killing each other. I mean, a father cannot do what a mother can.
Speaking to the mic.
A father cannot do what a mother can.
Mm-hmm.
So once we begin to lose our mothers, we've already lost the kids. You know, before we got off the air, we were talking about, you know, that IKEA instruction map on how I need to build this table or how I need to build a transmission and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
We rely on instructions for everything. Even getting here, I would need GPS if I didn't come with Rizwan. I need a guide map. I need something. How are you going to raise a child or be a wife or be a mother and just improv that?
Mm-hmm.
So these women are taking off their clothes. They're taking away their senses. In reality, they're taking away any hope they have of success in search for freedom. When in reality, they're replacing those clothes with those chains of society. I mean, you're going to look on the streets, beating yourselves, dragging each other with your hair on the streets. Is that freedom? Getting an abortion every other weekend, is that freedom? Substance abuse, is that freedom? Drug abuse, getting tattoos, having five different kids from five different men, is that freedom? If that's freedom, then I don't want it. I don't want that for anyone. If I had a daughter, I'd want her locked up if that's what freedom is.
Mm-hmm.
So if wearing that scarf can protect me, if going that separate way in a mosque can save me, if trying to be like Virgin Mary is what gives me grace and protects my children and my household and stops me from being, you know, attacked like a dog on the street, then I'll take it.
We have churches on every corner. A lot of churches, especially in Milwaukee. This is the part of the Bible Belt. This is the end of the road of the Bible Belt. Should women start going back into the church, back into the mosque? I mean, like, what are they supposed to do?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Because, you know, you go into the church and there's, you know, there's some salvation there. You know, I'm sure people have, went back to the church or back into the mosque and they've saved themselves.
No, indeed. Now, we need to preface this and give context. As Muslims, we believe in all prophets, all monotheistic prophets.
Right.
Noah, Abraham, Jesus, Noah. So if anybody is truly following the teachings of these prophets, they will be able to navigate through life to a decent degree.
Mm-hmm.
But to truly thrive and succeed, you need the latest, the most advanced teachings, which would only be found in Islam. But if anybody sincerely goes and prays to God, we don't believe that we have a monopoly on faith or salvation.
Mm.
So if anybody prays to God, they can be guided. And that's the one thing about Muslims that I always loved, about Ahmadis especially. You know, I was talking to a Christian lady the other day, and she says, you do so much good for society. You guys feed the poor. You take care of your people. She said, it's such a shame that you're going to burn in hell. And I'm like, I was like, I'm feeding your neighbors. I'm taking care of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing all of this, but I'm going to burn in hell because I don't accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, only as a prophet. I accept his mother. I accept his people, his teachings, and I'm going to burn in hell for eternity. So that's one reason why my great aunt accepted Islam. She lived with us for years. We never pressed Islam onto her. She grew up, you know, East Coast church, playing the piano, taught us all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I can't believe in Jesus anymore. She said, how can I believe in Jesus as a God if that God is going to send people like you to hell? When my family that does believe in Jesus turned their back on me. But the people who accept him as a prophet, you took me and you take care of me. How can I worship a God that's going to punish you? And just on account of that, she accepted Islam. So in Islam, we believe that anyone, an atheist, a Jew, a Christian, anyone can go to paradise. Now, the reason this is important to mention is because it unifies us. Now, if I'm a
Christian, let's talk about that.
Thinking everyone else is going to burn in hell, how am I really going to be your well-wisher? Mm. You're going to hell. God doesn't love you. Why should I? But in Islam, my paradise, my salvation is contingent upon your success. If you're an atheist, I have to make sure you're well-fed, well-dressed. It doesn't matter who or what you believe in. I'm held accountable for caring for you. But now if I'm a Jew, if I'm a Christian, oh, you're going to burn in hell. You know, forget you, I'm going to take care of my own.
Mm-hmm.
As a Muslim, I can't do that. As a Muslim, it's a Quranic injunction that if a synagogue, a temple, if a church is on fire, I have to go and save that building. Because that building stands for God, and so do I.
So our women need to keep their clothes on. When we come back, we're going to talk about keeping our clothes on, and also, did Jesus really die on the cross? Man, we're going to talk about this bombshell in a minute. Woo, I like that. I like that. $500. $500, y'all. You guys once had a sign up in your building, in the window of the building. $500 for somebody that can prove that Jesus did die on the cross. And people would come in and nobody won. Am I right?
Yeah, it was almost every week somebody coming through with their Bible in hand. I remember I was a little kid at the time. When our mosque was over on North in Lisbon, right where they met. but people used to come in all the time with the sign that we said has, and that offer still stands, but we just took the sign down because it was you want to build more unity amongst people than so the divisions, and that was something that kind of was more controversial. But the sign said $500 reward for anybody that could prove from the Bible that Jesus died on the cross.
So tell me, this is going to be this is going to be good. I'm almost closing my eyes because I can just see somebody calling. And yes, we're going to take some calls, definitely. 833-212-1017. We can go to the end of the earth with this one. Thanks, Zach. I know who's calling. Give me the basis of Jesus not dying on the cross. Like, Jesus didn't die on the cross. What does that do for humanity if he didn't?
Man, you're not pulling any punches.
Nah. We're going Ali today.
Rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
So, did Jesus die on the cross? No, we don't believe so. In essence.
Now, listen.
No, we're not trying. I want to say this very respectfully. We're not out here trying to hurt any feelings. I'm not here trying to put anyone's God down. I'm just saying our truth.
Right.
And I say that with the most, highest form of respect to everyone who's listening. We don't believe that Jesus died on the cross. We don't believe in the divinity of a human being. We believe that Jesus was sent as a prophet, succeeded as a prophet, and lived and died as a man, just like every prophet before him and every prophet after him. Mm-hmm. We don't believe there was any divinity to his spirit per se as, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And we don't believe in failure. Jesus was sent for the tribes of Israel. If I'm to believe the story that was given to me, not the story that I researched myself, but the story that was whipped into the millions of slaves that came here, the story that was beaten and raped into us, if that's what I'm picking up on and that's what we're talking about, because your parents didn't accept Christianity. Kasim Saab's parents didn't accept Christianity. Rashid Saab didn't accept Christianity, Rizwan's grandfather. That was inherited. And if I'm inheriting something through hell and through coal and through a whip, I'm going to question it a bit before I keep giving it to my kids. Mm. Before I keep being fed and giving that poison, I'm going to look back a bit.
So this you're talking about our transatlantic slave trade. Okay.
So the easiest way to be subservient to a master is to believe that a white man was your God. That's the easiest way to be okay with getting whipped. To believe that, that's what my God looks like. That's who and what I'm supposed to look like. And why would God shape and form a religion in this manner?
That's Donald Trump. Donald Trump wants to look like God.
100%. So how am I going to, deteriorate and degrade the face of my God to a person? And the silliest arguments, is he black? Is he white? Does he have blue eyes? Does he have blonde hair? How am I going to confine my God to those mortal characteristics? So now we got a Jesus baby that was in the womb for 9 months. Now he's God. So was God sitting in the womb for 9 months? Then he was born. Did he pretend like he didn't know English for the first year of his life? It was goo goo gaga, even though he knew English? Or did he pop out the womb talking, speaking English? Or what, Aramaic, or whatever it was at the time? Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, what is it? So did God just play dumb for years, pretend to learn how to walk? And then all of a sudden, one day, he was like, well, now I think I should know how to walk. Because if it was a miraculous child that came out talking, walking, I wouldn't have to question that that's God. But there's no historical account, so how much do I have to dumb myself down to believe all of this? It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. And again, we don't believe in failure. So when Jesus was sent to unite the tribes of Israel, he didn't.
So no prophet has failed.
No prophet has failed. Every prophet succeeds in his teachings. And then you're going to go back to the one true sin, that God created us of sin and he had to sacrifice. We don't believe in that salvation either. We believe in salvation based off our deeds, based off our merit. So, this is a huge conversation. But if my salvation is based off drenching myself in the blood of Christ, that doesn't make me feed my neighbor. That doesn't make me a better human being, a better mother, a better father, inherently, because my sins are forgiven. I'm good, you go get your own. But as a Muslim, I'm not good unless my neighbor's good too. So my entire life is vying with one another in good works, fastabiqul khairat, as we call it, to make sure that everyone else is fed, everyone else is taken care of. Because the second I slip, I can lose my place in paradise. But as a Christian, I have this, you know, facade of salvation where if I accept Jesus, I'm okay. They can starve. They can get bombed in Gaza. They can get wrecked on the slave ships. You know, they can be slaves and I'm okay. As a Muslim, my heart bleeds as the rest of the world does. And I can't sleep until the world's okay. So if everyone in the world saw their salvation like that, it would be a very different place. If the men who shot that 9-year-old girl saw the world like this, it would be a very different place. But they accepted Jesus Christ. So I'll see them in paradise, right?
Mm.
Or is it something different? Is it different? Because they killed a 9-year-old girl, are their sins not forgiven? So as a Muslim, it's something completely different. It's something that actually makes sense. So did Jesus die on the cross? No, he was sent. He was punished on the cross because he was a disbeliever, just like Ahmadis and Muslims are punished around the world. He was taken off the cross, and then he continued to travel towards what we now consider India to unite the tribes of Israel.
India?
Am I saying this out of nothing? No. We got historical records.
He went to, hold on.
Well, where were the tribes of Israel? Where were the tribes of Judea? They were not where they say Jesus was crucified. And we have historical records. And for anyone who's listening, don't ask ChatGPT. Don't Google it. Come to the mosque and ask me. If someone got an issue, if someone wants to know more, come and ask me. That's why I'm here. If someone's brave enough to disagree, then come and ask me.
That $500 is still on the table?
Rizwan Saab, you got it, right?
I got it.
They got the five. Hey, listen.
He upped it to $1,000, by the way.
It's $1,000. It's $1,000. Hey, y'all, 833-212-1017. I got a G. I got a stack. I got a thousand on the table right now for anybody that can prove that Jesus died on the cross. I mean, you know.
Let me just add this.
Yeah, add it.
It comes from the Bible. You know, it was Matthew 12.
Verses 39 and 40. It said, a wicked and adulterous society asks what shall be the sign of the Christ. He said, there will be no sign but that of Jonah the whale. As Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish, so should be the Son of Man in the body of the earth. Now we look at that. Jonah went in there alive. He was in there alive. He came out alive. Now they saying that Jesus Christ went in the body of the earth dead, and he was in there dead, and he came out resurrected. So there is no comparison.
Mm.
So it's not a story of revival. It's a story of survival. Mm. Jesus survived the crucifixion on the cross. And it's right there in the Bible, you know, and people need to just read and understand that.
So Jesus is, you know, according to this theory right here, Jesus is dead. He's in a grave in India. But what does this do to the comfort of people here that are now living amongst all these crosses on churches and stuff like that? Does it disunify us or does it unify?
No, I feel great. If I was waiting for a God that vanished and abandoned the tribes of Israel thousands of years ago, and I've been waiting on him for the past few centuries, and all of a sudden I know that he succeeded, he's dead and buried, and God is still with us, and I'm no longer waiting for this man to float down from the sky, I would be relieved. Because when is he coming and where is he?
Mm.
We needed Jesus now. That 9-year-old girl needed Jesus when she got shot.
Mm.
Those men behind the wheel who ran over those two girls needed Jesus on the road. Every junkie on the street that's overdosing, every mother that's abandoning her kids, every father that's rotting in prison, because he didn't know, but they all needed Jesus. So are you just telling me there's a hiatus where God didn't care about us anymore? And he just said, well, screw them. You know, they'll be okay. But the rest of, you know, 2050 and on, they'll have Jesus. Everyone else, they just got to suffer. Is this the paradise in this world and the hereafter that I was supposed to inherit? Is this really what's happening? I would be relieved if someone told me that's not the case anymore. That I wasn't abandoned. That I'm not lost. That I'm not just floating in the ether waiting for a prophet who might be a God, who is the Father, who is the Son, to come back and give me a better life that none of my parents or grandparents or great-grandparents benefited from. If I realized that there actually was hope, there actually was a better way, I would take the biggest sigh of relief because this Jesus, with all respect that everyone's been waiting for, has not been the cure for the ailment that we see in Milwaukee.
Woo! That thousand. Hey, we're going to take some callers on the way in from our break. We're going to take some callers. 833-212-1017. Callers, if you are on the line, please stay on the line. We're going to take a break for 2 minutes, and we'll be right back with this $1,000, see if somebody can prove it wrong. All right. Welcome back to The Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir, the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. We have Al on the line. Al, what's going on, Al?
Well, my thing is, when all religions want women to be obedient, let the truth be told, because when women are obedient, you can walk over them. And if I'm not mistaken, there was a lot of Muslims who voted for Donald Trump, and there's a lot of Muslims who step out on their women as well. So no religion is greater than the other. But what I find to be so funny, when they say, oh, she got 4 or 5 baby daddies, I don't hear y'all talking about the men. Y'all give them all kind of bypasses. And I ain't never stopped no man from any religion of climbing in bed with if she had 4 or 5 kids. So my thing is, what's greater? And Virgin Mary, wasn't she 12, 14 years old where she got married, which means he would be on the sex offender list? So I look at it like this. No religion is better or greater than the other. All of them want women to bow down. Y'all don't want no woman to match your own energy, because if she shut up and just be a toilet for you, you can laugh and do what you want. Because you remember back in the 70s and 80s, Muslims was marrying white women and naming them Queen Arkadar. So I'm just saying, if you're going to push a narrative, everybody deserves respect. And no matter what religion is, nobody's sugar, honey, iced tea smell greater than anybody else.
Thanks, Al.
We all put a pants leg on one leg at a time.
You're right, Al. Thank you. And Al, I think you're right. You got a point in some ways. Everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time, and everybody deserves respect.
Don't do it. It won't get done.
You know, may I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, first off, I want to say, Al, it's great to meet you. Great to speak with you, and thank you for calling in. You know, I really appreciate your feedback. I want to begin by apologizing for whatever life experiences gave you such a negative outlook on faith in Islam. You know, those weren't our type of Muslims. Whoever you met that gave you such a foul taste in your mouth for the way we treat our women or the negative perception that you have, on their behalf, I apologize, because you weren't given a true perception of Islam. You were given some bigoted, misconstrued version of something someone called Islam, be it they practicing their own inclinations or culture. But Al, what you were introduced to was not the faith of Islam. You were introduced to a man or woman's own inclinations. In Islam, no woman or man is obedient to any other human being. In Islam, we only show obedience to God. And in society where America or the West or Germany or Italy is trying to strip away the rights that God has given to men and women, it's Islam that stands in that stead to give us the rights that God has trusted to us. For example, who's there saying women have the right to divorce? Who's out there saying that women have the right to inheritance? Who's out there saying that women have the right to be independent? It's not America 100 years ago. It wasn't America 200 years ago. There's many countries in the world I go to, Al, where these women don't have rights. But you give them a holy Quran, and guess what? They can stand up for themselves.
So the women in Islam, they got their own thing going on.
100% independent of men.
Hmm.
From God himself. And that's something that no man can interfere with. That's what Islam is all about. That's what Islam stands for. To remove the tyranny of oppression. Be it from men, women, children, the government, politics, race, culture. Islam is about removing oppression, liberating yourself from tyranny, and thriving, finding subservience and freedom in God alone.
So y'all can marry more than one woman?
Can we? I mean, I live in America. I'm not here to say what man can and cannot do. You know, as a Muslim, and people think, oh, you know, you can answer X, Y, and Z. As a Muslim, something people don't know. Sharia law, this thing that we keep hearing, really doesn't exist. Mm. That's not a thing. What that is, it's, you know, media X, Y, and Z. As a Muslim, Quranically, what does the Holy Quran say? I have to follow the law of the land. So if the law of the land says you can only marry one woman, if the law of the land says I can't go more than 90 miles an hour, if the law of the land says I have to pay my mortgage as a Muslim, that's what I got to do. And if the law of the land says I cannot usurp the rights of others, then I won't. As a Muslim, I am a patriot to the highest degree. And much of my family has served in the armed forces and law enforcement. We've died and bled for this flag like everyone else. So I'm not going to tolerate someone else trampling the rights of women that my family has died and bled for, or that my prophet sacrificed his life for. We're not here to abuse or usurp the rights of women or orphan or men or the poor or the refugees or the widows. What we're here to do is to stand up for them, because nobody else will. There will be phases in history where rights rise and fall, but a Muslim, the Holy Quran, and Islam will always stand for justice independently. And I'm glad that people like Al feel comfortable enough to express themselves, and we can get things like that right and straightened out.
So back to your subject real quick, because we run out of time. Back to the subject of this $1,000, if people can prove that Jesus did die on the cross. If they can't, and the theory is not proven, then, and the cross is start decreasing in the churches, right? Then what?
I mean, we have a church, what, a 30-second walk away from the mosque that closed down. It's up for sale.
Yep.
I mean, that's not strange in America. The churches are closing, but the alcohol, tobacco, vape shops are opening. That's not the trajectory that we want America to go in. Hmm. The reality of the situation is we can argue, we can talk, we can converse, but before someone comes here talking to us about Jesus, God, have you tried talking to God? Before you come trying talking to me. You know, I was talking to a first responder the other day, and he was breaking down CPR to us. Mm. And he said, would you ever break the ribs of an old lady? And everyone kind of jumps. What are you talking about, man? And he said, well, when I do CPR, when someone's dying on the floor, to properly administer CPR, we understand that the ribs of that individual just might break. And that's how serious we take saving a life. Many a times, people who have cancer, they undergo radiation. Mm. Everyone knows radiation will be negative to your well-being and health, but it can defeat the cancer. And people are willing to undergo that treatment to cure that disease. Is America willing to try Islam? I'll try chemotherapy. I'll try everything for these physical ailments. But when it comes to a spiritual disease, are we going to try this cure?
So the war, there's a war going on. Real quick, is there a solution for the war?
Which war? The spiritual war? The political war?
The oil war. The one that's going on, you know, between America and the Middle East.
When humanity stops worshiping different gods, when humanity stops worshiping themselves, their ego, their pride, their money, their fortune, and begins to worship one God and serves him, the only war we'll have is against Satan. And not against one another. The solution has been seen in history. And within our world and our circles and in our global community, we see that solution every single day. Because we don't suffer from those ailments. But again, as the world bleeds, we bleed. As the parents of that 9-year-old daughter mourn, we mourn too. As the victims of that hit and run mourn, we do too. So until the world is at rest and at peace, we won't be. And we'll be on the streets, in society, in Milwaukee, in Compton, in Las Vegas, in Miami, with everybody, fighting for their rights, fighting for the belief in the oneness of God, fighting for the independence and the sustenance of our rights and liberties, as long as Islam is here on earth.
You know, a lot of times, we're running out of time. We'll bring you guys back, but I had a story real quick. I was working out in the gym, and I asked a pastor that I used to work out with whether or not if he would join me in talking to individuals that will be talking to individuals on the street that are committing violence at night. And he said to me that it would be very, very dangerous to do that. and it really turned me off. And I want to know, do you guys put your lives on the line too?
He didn't know you were a fifth degree black belt, did he?
Nah, he didn't know that. He didn't know that. We had a caller on the line, but I think that we're gonna kind of bring you guys back. We're gonna talk about these $1,000, whether or not somebody has actually won it. Where can people find you?
Well,
so our mosque is over on 104th in Oklahoma.
Speaking to the mic.
The mosque is over on 104th in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
If you want more information on the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, the website's alislam.org, A-L-I-S-L-A-M.org, and we're available for dialogue anytime.
Hey, if you guys want that $1,000, if you can prove it, you better come check them out. Alislam.org, Ahmadiyya Muslim community, Milwaukee. There it is. Milwaukee, there it is. This is the solution. We have a bunch of them. Or is there a solution? Two sheriffs said it starts with our young people. This community said it starts with the soul, feeding people, giving blood, opening doors, love for all, hatred for none. It's not a slogan. It's a challenge. To me, to you, to everybody, this is their solutions. We got Jazz Tyler coming up next. We bringing the peace with her only on 101.7, the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. We out, y'all. Peace.